So, there is on the board, Charters of a Parliamentary Reform after 1842, because 1842 was this watershed, if you like, the biggest Chartist action, where half a million people on strike for the Charter, much bigger than previous actions, in the sense that it's, of course, much easier to sign a petition than to go on strike, so it's much more forceful, the mass strike, of course, if the, this is normal, if a government receives a petition with 100,000 names on it, they may not be very happy. If there is a strike with 100,000 strikers, they are very unhappy. It's much, much more important, of course. You have to measure the different kinds of action. They have more or less effect. So in 1842, after the second petition, there was the strike, which I spoke about last week. And so I'm now going to go on to the rest of Chartism and the rest of parliamentary reform. Now, it is complicated because Chartism is really an organisation which begins around 1837 and lasts about 11 or 12 years, although in the 1850s there's still a little left. So you have 11 or 12 years, tens of thousands of people who join because they believe in the Charter, but then have a lot of different ideas. So you can imagine it's quite complicated, over 10 years with tens of thousands of people. That's a lot of ideas, a lot of activity, a lot of contradictions, a lot of internal conflicts, a lot of newspapers. It's very difficult to summarize very briefly. And of course, when you summarize very briefly, it's extremely difficult to be objective, because the more brief you have to be, the less objective you can be. And so there are many different opinions about Chartism. So to go back to the chronology, so 1842, before the strike, there was the second Chartist petition, the petition again rejected, and in August, this strike in the textile industry, not started by the Chartists, but where they decide, and we saw one of the documents last week from the metal workers, where they decide that this is now going to be a strike for the Charter. The strike ends slowly. I mentioned this last week. The strike ends slowly in various areas, although in some areas it lasts for almost 2 months. And a certain amount of repression. 56 Chartists from the Potteries, remember the Potteries is a region of England, are transported, for example. But rather surprisingly, perhaps, this is not the end of Chartism. This is not the end of Chartism. So really, in a way, you could imagine when the Chartists are still going from town to town trying to persuade people, people are saying, well, your first petition was completely rejected. Your armed insurrection was crushed. Your general strike lasted 2 months and didn't win anything, didn't win any the Charter. Why should I join you? Yes, it must have been quite a difficult time. But it continued, and it continued also to be a place of debate with many different ideas how to move forward. And I'm going to talk about some of those now. Because Chartism then, being the first national mass working class movement, involved all sorts of debates, not just about the votes, but about what kind of society do we want. So interestingly enough, it's not a political party. Mass political parties do not yet exist. But in some way it's the embryon of a political party, and it, because it has its newspapers, its debates, and so on. And it's different currents and factions, not just the moral force and the physical force, but also many other fractions. So the one which comes to dominate between 1842 and 1848, one of the aspects of Chartism that comes to dominate is the lands plan. The lands plan. And this then is an idea which comes from one of the Chartist leaders. One of the Chartist leaders, the idea is brought up by O'Connor, Fergus O'Connor. Okay? What is this idea? Well, this idea is fundamentally that wage workers, industrial workers, Chartists, we'll all pay a little bit of money every month, and with this money we will buy lands And so that's workers, and in particular unemployed workers, can have a little land and move back to the villages. Yeah. So for some people, the Industrial Revolution and going to the town, life is so hard that surely going back to the villages is a solution, perhaps. And so this is the idea of the land plan. There are many reasons given. There are many reasons given by O'Connor why the land plan is a good idea. First of all, so that more land can be cultivated, yeah, to prevent famine coming back. In fact, famine as such, national famine, will not come back in England, but it will come back in Ireland in a big way in the 1850s, the biggest famine. The biggest famine in Ireland. And many people, including O'Connor, believe that small farms grow food better, grow more food. At the time, it's more food. You know, today, many people believe that small farms grow better food, but not many people believe that small farms grow more food. Well, at the time, the problem is quantity. Yeah, and so they say, well, you know, the small farms will grow more food, and Britain will be independent of imported food. And so that's one reason for having this. Number two, if people have their own land, according to Mr. O'Connor, if people have their own land, they will work harder, they will rely on themselves, whereas in the factories, they are completely dependent on their masters. They are servants, in a way. And so he believed this would develop independence. Notice that this is a general Victorian value, independence, self-reliance, which is very popular among the elite, and the general attitude of the elite to the ordinary people. The Salvation Army will say, you know, the Lord helps those who help themselves. Yeah, this is really the Victorian value. And a little bit of this will be in O'Connor's land plan. He also hopes that if workers leave the towns and go to these new villages, these new Chartist villages, then there will be not so many workers in the towns, so there will be enough jobs for everybody. The land plan is an idea to fight unemployment as well. So it has a lot of different reasons. Some of the reasons may appear to us today to be rather naive, but then it's easy afterwards to understand that they don't necessarily work that way. So sets up this land plan. Because O'Connor is a man, just one moment, because O'Connor is a man of action and not a philosopher, you know, many intellectuals are writing books about the better society we should have, and O'Connor is a man of action. He says, oh, well, this is what we're doing. I want 10,000 people. We're going to begin it now. Yeah, so a man of action. What was the question there? Yes, I will tell you exactly the system. Absolutely a contributory system. There we go. So it is launched in 1845. In 1845 it begins. O'Connor has the idea before this. O'Connor has the idea from 1841. In 1841 he writes a pamphlet, The Remedy for National Poverty. The Remedy for National Poverty. In general, political pamphlets at the time could be sometimes rather more simple than today. Can you imagine today a politician writing a pamphlet, The Remedy for National Poverty, how to eliminate poverty? It's ambitious, yeah, ambitious. So that's the idea. So launched in 1845 as the Chartist Land Cooperative. And in December 1845, a convention held in Manchester exclusively for this reason. And a year later, the annual conference. They had a number of difficulties, partly legal difficulties. The government was not the government caused them certain legal problems. Are you doing this in the right legal way? Can you do this? At the end of the whole story will be when the government declares it illegal in 1851. So it will last from 1845 till 1851. It will last 6 years. So how did it work? Well, the idea was to raise £130,000. This is what they wanted to do. They wanted to find £130,000. As you can imagine, at the time, this is a lot of money. Yeah, a lot of money. By people giving money. And this caused a number of problems. First of all, because the amount of money which they wanted people to give would be 2 or 3 months' wages. They could pay over a long period of time, over several years, but the result was 2 or 3 months' wages to pay, which is a lot of money if you're poor. Yeah, a lot of money if you're poor. So one of the problems was it was difficult to find people who had the money to do so. Secondly, of course, there was the difficulty of how to decide who was going to have the land, and they decided to use a lottery system. Yeah, so everybody pays in, and then you have a lottery, and you have one. You have a house and a small piece of land in this village. Yeah, and that's how it worked. By the end of 1845, 30 of the 32 districts had produced subscriptions. This was especially popular in Yorkshire and Lancashire because there was high unemployment and very bad housing. Yeah, so it was popular. It was popular, and it rose. And the first estate was bought in 1846. In 1846, they bought some lands, and originally it had another name, but later on they called it O'Connorville. Yeah, so the town of O'Connor. Yeah, of the guy who originated it. Say again? Okay. Where did they buy it? It is near Watford. Okay, 60 kilometres north of London. Okay. The second one in Gloucestershire, and another one in a place which I don't know, which took the name of Charterville. Okay, Charterville. So these names are important because they show that it's not just, of course they realized it was going to be a very long process. These had at the beginning only a few people could move in, yeah, at the beginning. But it was the symbol, yeah, the symbol of the perspective for the future. This is Charterville, this is O'Connorville, this is our future. However, it was not so successful. First of all, the estates were quite small. The Charter Land Association, of course, had to buy relatively cheap land. They couldn't buy the best land because they didn't have enough money, so they tended to buy cheap land. It was not so easy to do. So in the next 3 years, 250 families were settled, but that's all. In total, there were only 250 families settled in the different towns altogether, in total. In the next 3 years, yeah. So before 1848. So not a lot. Not a lot of people settled. So in some ways, its importance was more as a symbolic campaign, we need another society, than its practical results. Not all of the new farmers were very successful. As you know, people discovered this again in the 1960s when people wanted to go and work on the land. If you are a teacher, and at this time, if you are a factory worker, you may be a very bad farmer. It's not so easy here. And so, in fact, many of the farmers were not really very successful, and many of them had to leave again. Many of them had to leave again. Thirdly, it was controversial. Not all the Chartists agreed with this. And finally, of course, Parliament intervened and after a few years declared that the plan was illegal. I will not give you the legal details of why they declared it illegal. It's not very interesting. But it certainly did rather frighten the elites. Although in reality it was very small, it appeared to be an idea where Chartism, this big mass movement of ordinary people, was going to decide what the future of the country should be. whereas the Parliament considered that this was not a good idea. The Parliament considered that only they could decide. So, also had a problem with Fergus O'Connor, the leader. The pressure, it's difficult to say. Psychology is not history. Psychology is difficult to organize. But it seems that the pressure was too much. And he became less and less stable, and he died in a mental hospital at the time in 1855. Yeah, he cracked up. Yeah, it was too much for him. And we don't know exactly why, but because psychology is difficult to note. But certainly you can imagine the pressure would be very, very big. And that was the end of that story. The story of the lands plan. So, what does it mean politically? Well, in some ways, it's more ambitious than the charter. Remember the original charter? The charter is saying we want the vote and the secret ballot and so on, and payment for MPs and so on. And this land plan, in some ways, it is more ambitious. No, we want to reorganize the whole society. We want people to live in a different way. And we want to control, as a mass movement, who lives where and organize the economy differently. So from the point of view of ideas, it's more ambitious. It's not asking for a reform, it's imagining another society. From the point of view of practice, in some ways it can be considered to be less ambitious, because of course they believed, or they appeared to believe, that they were avoiding a conflict with the elite. Yeah. The first Chartist petition, the armed insurrection, the general strike, was a conflict with the elite. What do we need to do, according to the Chartists in the first wave? We need to frighten the elite so much that they give us the right to vote. Or the moral force, we need to persuade them. But nevertheless, the idea is that the elite of the society must change. The land plan is an idea, there's a little bit of defeatism in it somewhere, I think. Because it means, the petition didn't work, the insurrection didn't work, the strike didn't work. Maybe we can avoid the problem. And instead of changing the society organized by the elite, we can avoid it and build our own little society somewhere else. Yeah. So that's the one of the reflections that needs to be looked at. Interestingly enough, this is a question which is still not resolved. That even today you have people debating, is it better to try to change the society or try to avoid it? Yet shall we live differently or have a conflict and oblige the elite to change the system? This is not, I don't have the answer yet, but it's a debate which continues today. But the Chartism is some of the first elements of this. This is also... So ideologically, it was quite strong. The elite were rather unhappy about this idea that these ordinary people could do this. But its practical effect was very, very small. Its practical effect was very, very small. 250 people moved house. Yeah, it's all rather small. And of course, it's interesting that, because I can imagine at the time, the supporters of the land plan would say, yes, of course, only 250 people, but you have to start somewhere. That's just the beginning. We'll go further and further. Yeah? And you can see this kind of debate today in very many social movements. And it's one of the decisions which has to be made. I spoke last week about some of the other elements of Chartism, teetotal Chartism, a strand which considered that drink was the big problem. And this is an interesting idea, because teetotal Chartism, of course, in part absorbs some of the moralism of the elite. You know, what is the problem? You are not living well enough. The problem is you. The problem is you. It's not the system, it's you. You're drinking too much. Yeah? But there were other, it was not so stupid as that. There were tactical reasons. Teetotal Chartism, so the Chartisme anti-alcool, teetotal Chartism considered, in this way we can persuade the middle classes. We can show the middle classes that we are respectable people. In this way we will win the votes. Another argument, tax. The government received a lot of money from tax on drink. Very, very important. At this time, there is, I think I'm correct in saying, at this time there is no income tax. Tax on drink is an important part of the government income, and so some Chartists believed if we refuse to drink alcohol, this will be a pressure on the government because they will not be receiving money in tax. Okay, and here I have a little quotation from one of them. Yeah, teetotalism leads to knowledge. Knowledge leads to thinking. Thinking leads to discontent. So one of the supporters of teetotal Chartism said this. He said, you know, teetotalism can change the world because teetotalism leads to knowledge. Knowledge leads to thinking. Thinking leads to discontent. And I just want to repeat that at the time we're talking about a teetotal campaign in towns where the consumption of alcohol is massive. Absolutely massive. It's, you know, something, you know, a litre of gin. You know, it's not going out to have a cup of beers on a Saturday night. Although alcohol is still controversial today. If you see some newspapers recently, it's still a controversial question. Christian Chartism. There was another strand. Christian Chartism, trying to link together the idea of the Charter with the ideas of Christianity. And finally, Educational Chartism, I mentioned last week, also known as Knowledge Chartism, which proposed a national system of independent workers' schools with the boards elected by universal suffrage. So what we're going to do, we have a lot of Chartists in Manchester, we're going to establish a Chartist school. How will we elect the committee to run the school? All people in Manchester can vote. So we will establish universal suffrage in this one area, also as a model to show the society that universal suffrage is possible. The Chartist schools I mentioned last week were rather progressive, and also they insisted that children from different religions should go to the same school. At this time, this is a very, very advanced idea. Now, not everybody agreed with these, of course. O'Connor in particular, O'Connor, who was in favour of the land plan, he criticised all these different divisions, Christian Chartism. He said, I object to Christian Chartism because it means we cannot work with other religions. Yeah? I object to teetotal Chartism because many people will refuse because they want to drink. I object to knowledge Chartism. And I can't really summarize that. In any case, Mr. O'Connor explains why the different limited forms of Chartism, teetotal Chartism, educational Chartism, Christian Chartism, ways of dividing the movement. This is how he summarizes it. I am anxious to see every Chartist a good Christian, a good neighbor, and a good friend. I am desirous of seeing every Chartist sober, industrious and honest, full of knowledge and filling houses. But once make non-conformity ground for exclusion and you establish sects and sections instead of one universal core of regenerators. That is, he says, the problem with your Christian Chartism, teetotal Chartism, educational Chartism is you are excluding part of the working population. We need to stay united. And of course, the difficulty is you need to stay united. But if you want to stay united, you need to have a tactic which shows progress. And this was the idea of the land plan. The next big watershed in the Chartist movement is 1848, which will also be then the moment of the third great Chartist petition. Now, of course, 1848 is the year of revolution in Paris, revolution in, I think, Prussia, certainly in Vienna, and so on. So there is a revolution is in the air, and Chartism again. So in February in France, the revolution and the unity between the Irish independence movement and the Chartists leads to increased radicalism among sections of people in Britain. And Mr. Harney, I will talk about some of these leaders later, Julian Harney writes in 1848, "How long, men of Great Britain and Ireland, how long will you carry the stigma of being the only people in Europe who dare not will their freedom?" They say, look, the French are revolting, the others are revolting, the Italians as well. Why aren't you? Yes, that's what he's saying of them. "The hour is nigh. From the hilltops of Lancashire, from the voices of the hundreds of thousands, has ascended to heaven the oath of union and the rally cry of conflict. Englishmen and Irishmen have sworn to have the Charter and repeal." Not the Charter and repeal, the Charter and repeal of the Union of British and Britain and Ireland. So now a certain unity. We want the Charter and we also want independence for Ireland. Yeah, the Charter and repeal, or, so how does it say, Englishmen and Irishmen have sworn to have the Charter and repeal, or Vive la République, of what it on text. Yeah? And of course, that is a word we mean today, which doesn't frighten us very much, but that is very scary. So in April 1848, a new Chartered Convention met in London, a new petition, and the beginnings of new leaders. Yeah, this is 10 years later, some of the leaders are in prison and so on. In particular, in the new generation, there is William Cuffy and Ernest Jones. These are two of the big leaders of this wave of Chartism. And Ernest Jones, a friend of Karl Marx, which will be have a certain importance. So the elite very, very frightened. One of the lords, Lord Campbell, wrote a letter to his brother. And he wrote, "This may be the last time I write to you before the Republic is established." Yeah, so certainly they believed that the situation was very, very dangerous. One of the bizarre things about Britain is that because the monarchy is so old, we often imagine that it has never been under threat. This is certainly not true. So they organized to have a march on Parliament. The idea was we're going to get everybody together and we're going to march on Parliament. But in the last at the last moment, they decided not to. The leadership decided not to march on Parliament. Now, important thing about the march on Parliament today: a march on Parliament is an accepted part of democratic process. And if some organisation announces we're going to have a demonstration and we're going to Parliament, then everybody thinks, oh, they'll give a letter to the Prime Minister. Yeah, nobody thinks they are going to occupy the Parliament and have a revolution. But at the time, that was the kind of atmosphere. So some of the left wing of the Chartist movement were very angry about the decision not to march on Parliament and to march somewhere else instead. Fergus O'Connor decided it was not a good idea to march on Parliament. William Cuffy and some others were very unhappy about this. So what happened is they sent a small number of people to present the petition. Petition, how many signatures were on the petition? We will never know. The Chartists said 6 million. This is probably an exaggeration. The government, 2 days later, said, we have counted them, there are 2 million. They count very, very quickly. Certainly none of the figures we can consider to be objective, but certainly there were millions of signatures. That's for sure, there were millions of signatures. And after that day, when they had planned the march on Parliament, and then the march on Parliament didn't happen, then that was the beginning of the end for Chartism. Right, I just have a little bit more. Oh yeah, I just like to yes. Yeah, after this last day, when the announcement had been made that we have a bigger petition than before, and we are going to march on Parliament, hundreds of thousands of people, we're going to march on Parliament, and then this did not happen, afterwards the movement becomes demoralised and goes into decline. Now, the elite took this petition very seriously indeed. Queen Victoria was taken out of London to the Isle of Wight So Queen, not just taken out of London, taken to an island where she could run away to France if necessary, yeah? Huh? The official buildings were sandbagged, yeah? The sac de sable autour des bâtiments clés. And thousands of soldiers came into London to defend the parliaments. All around the country, mass demonstrations, riots in four or five cities. But fundamentally, if you want to sum up the situation, I think you have to say the government was prepared for revolution and the Chartists were not prepared for revolution. And so it was really did not work very well. Interestingly enough, the petition was destroyed. Yeah? The Chartists said there are 6 million signatures. The government said there are only 2 million, and we're going to destroy it next week. You know, interesting, because it's very unusual actually, because governments often keep historical documents because they believe that history will say they were right, and this is why you can. Luckily for historians, even dictators often keep the documents because they believe that history will believe they were right. Yeah, I know, even if they're wrong, yeah, that's what they believe. But in this case, no, the petition has been completely destroyed, and so we will never know. So, yes, although, and in general, the official historians always make fun of this Chartist petition because, as you can imagine, if you have millions of signatures, there are also people who say, I get to write Mickey Mouse. Well, at the time, they didn't write Mickey Mouse because there was no Mickey Mouse. But of course, you could always find signatures which were, you know, Queen Victoria, because people like to have a laugh, yeah. And so that was always been used since. Okay, let me just stop there and start again.